Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The state of North Carolina is suing manufacturers of e-cigarettes and vaping products. In South Dakota, state epidemiologist Josh Clayton says a gap in data regarding e-cigarette use in the state's young people can create challenges for policymakers and public health officials. Since these products have been on the market for about 10 years and their popularity is increasing dramatically, we have invited Sanford research scientist Ariel Salia to the studio to talk about her ongoing research into tobacco addiction and non-combustible tobacco product usage. Dr. Salia, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So this is an area that's important to you, and a lot of people aren't paying attention to it until it makes national news. You're paying attention to this every day. How did you sort of get into this line of research?
Well, I started researching in general what addictive behaviors look like among adolescents, and I mostly studied cigarette addiction, conventional cigarettes I'm talking about, because that is a very common example of an addiction, and there's similarities across different types of addictions. But it's just easier to get data on cigarette smokers because there's more of them than, say, cocaine addicts. And being in that field for a couple of years, e-cigarettes started to emerge, and there has been more and more attention paid to the rising use of e-cigarettes among youth, and it's been kind of drastically taking off according to some surveys. So I became interested in it for that reason, because we don't know a lot of data on this and exactly how this is affecting the use of conventional products or nicotine use in general, and so I decided to study it.
All right. So how long has this research been going on? Is it long enough to sort of start seeing some results? I mean, we want to get to that, but first, give us an idea of how you do that research. Is it based on self-reporting studies? Is it when something is new, you know, how do you do the best kind of research?
Yeah, that's a great question. So most of the data that I analyze are from survey reports. So there's a number of surveys conducted by the CDC every year, or every other year, such as the National Youth Tobacco Survey or the Monitoring the Future Survey, and those both target youth and their tobacco use and other nicotine products. And so it is mostly self-report, but one of the problems, and you mentioned that the state epidemiologist said there's missing data. That's very right. True. Most of these national surveys did not start collecting e-cigarette use until, in some cases, even last year. So that's years behind the initial surge in e-cigarettes. So there's a lot of missing data for those years. And e-cigarette usage is becoming more standard in some of these surveys, but it's only just become that. So we still need good data.
All right. So a lot of people who don't even know what an e-cigarette is, it's still tobacco. Tell us a little bit about what these different products are like. How do we see them? What brand names are they under?
So the main difference between conventional cigarettes and e-cigarette usage is that conventional cigarettes are combustible. It burns the elements and then you inhale them. But anything related to e-cigarettes electronically heats the elements, so you don't have that combustible element. So things like Juuls qualify as e-cigarettes, and there's so many new brand names and product types. But the commonality when I speak of e-cigarettes is that it electronically heats the elements, so it's more of a vapor instead of
still
combustible.
Tobacco.
It's nicotine. It's not nicotine. Necessarily tobacco.
Okay.
So it's kind of synthetically derived nicotine.
And it can be flavored. How come? Because the conventional cigarettes are not, they're tobacco flavored.
Right. So with conventional cigarettes, they're either tobacco flavored. In some cases, menthol is the only flavor exception. And that, I guess, got grandfathered in under some of the regulations. So conventional cigarettes are not allowed to have flavors. E-cigarettes are a different product because they're not derived from tobacco directly. They're nicotine, but they're not tobacco. Then they are able to get around some of those regulations and have flavors.
Okay. So the criticism is, of course, by getting around those regulations, they're creating flavors like gummy bear and French toast and hot chocolate or, you know, whatever, bubble gum, which is, people are saying, directly targeted toward kids. So are we seeing a lot of, like, what has your data shown about how many kids are drawn to e-cigarettes, and what are some of the limitations of what we know right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that is the concern out there from the mainstream public health community, that e-cigarettes are being advertised towards kids with all these flavors, these candy flavors, with cartoons on the packaging and so forth. And so they are perhaps being targeted towards kids. However, my data don't really back up that we're drawing in new populations of users. So some of the limitations of the data are, and without getting into the nitty-gritty statistically, it's really difficult to be able to tell whether e-cigarettes have their own effect or whether those kids were going to use conventional tobacco products anyway if e-cigarettes had not been on the market. So some of the things that we can look at are what are the risk factors of kids that use e-cigarettes versus conventional cigarettes versus kids that never use either product. And when you look at sociodemographic factors, when you look at the history of family tobacco use and the peer group tobacco use, when you look at mental health issues, the kids that use e-cigarettes look a lot more similar on all of these factors to the conventional cigarette users than either of them do to the non-users. So we're kind of comparing apples and oranges when we compare non-users and e-cigarette users and then look at what they go on to do later with
tobacco.
So
let's talk about addiction in the sense that you know, how do you know that you're addicted to nicotine? Are these products as addictive as a conventional cigarette? How do you even measure a nicotine addiction?
That's a really good question. There is no blood test that you can do for nicotine addiction. It's again based on self-report, and there are better ways of asking it and worse ways of asking it. And there's a lot of researchers out there that devote their entire careers to validating some of these measurement scales and making sure that if I ask you a question on nicotine dependence, that it's really capturing the addiction aspect of nicotine dependence. So there's a couple of really rigorously measured scales out there, but they are based on self-report. So for example, one of the common items for nicotine dependence is how soon do you smoke when you wake up in the morning? And if it's within 5 minutes, then that's considered the most highly nicotine dependent answer, as opposed to the other extreme, which is more than 1 hour after waking up. So there's questions like that that are self-report, but there are rigorous ways of asking it. However, a lot of the existing research has been developed using these scales on conventional cigarettes, and it's not clear whether the same questions really apply and measure nicotine dependence in the same way to some of the newer products. So that's an active area of research right now, is to figure out how exactly do we measure nicotine dependence via self-report for e-cigarettes.
Right. And so what are you learning so far, or are you looking into this notion of it's a gateway to a conventional cigarette? Because that's an important question.
It is an important question, yes.
For a number of reasons. But first, before we get into those reasons, what are you finding about that?
So let me first say that I did buy into this. I did believe the gateway hypothesis when I first started researching. And I had my mind changed by the data that I looked at. And the data that I have a couple of studies out now that examine the gateway hypothesis, and I don't find any evidence for it. All of my research points to what in my field is called the common liability hypothesis, which is that there's a set proportion of the population that is bound to use one nicotine product or another, and they're more moving towards e-cigarette use and away from conventional tobacco use right now. So it's the same percentage of the population that uses tobacco. They're just using a different product now. So in other words, anybody that tries e-cigarettes was probably going to use conventional cigarettes anyway. And we certainly don't want to encourage e-cigarette use among youth, but let's be honest about it and say that kids are going to get their hands on some tobacco product, and we might as well make it e-cigarettes because those are estimated to have only 5% of the harmful effects of conventional cigarettes.
So that changes policy. It might change conversation around your kitchen table, might not. I'm not sure. That's up to parents. But it definitely would have an impact on some of the policy and regulations, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So I think there's a knee-jerk reaction in a lot of places now to regulate e-cigarettes as heavily as conventional cigarettes are being regulated. And that, in my estimation, is sort of premature in a lot of cases. And why does it matter? You might say, well, you know, we don't want kids to use e-cigarettes anyway, so what's the harm in banning flavors or banning advertisement to kids? The harm actually, and this is a study that's not mine, but it was a very interesting study I came across in the literature that found that states that passed e-cigarette legislation, it actually had the unintended effect of driving kids back towards conventional cigarettes. Hmm. So if we want to think about the overall public health picture and the harm reduction, I think e-cigarettes are a safer alternative.
Is it, when we talk about that conversation, that kitchen table conversation, though, what are some of the harms of e-cigarettes? I mean, if we're not going to say, you know, if the kid's going to come to the table and say, hey, at least it's not a regular cigarette, you know, for a parent who does smoke, mm-hmm. that might be an effective starting point for the conversation. But for somebody who doesn't and doesn't want their kids anywhere near any of these products, what are some of the risks of the e-cigarettes and the vaping products?
So they are not completely safe. They still have things like formaldehydes and other carcinogens in it, although the levels are far below that of conventional cigarettes. The nicotine itself is a problem, and one of the problems that I see in e-cigarettes, if they are a gateway, which is, I think, yet to be established, one of the problems, I think, is that most kids don't realize that they have nicotine in them. So that's a problem, because then you get addicted to nicotine without even realizing what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And nicotine does have a direct effect on cardiovascular health. So that could be a potential concern.
Lung problems? Are we seeing some, you know, we're starting to see these rumblings of kids with sort of catastrophic lung issues, and people are saying, is this connected to these products? What do you know about that?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment too much on that case, because I think it's unclear whether or not the e-cigarettes are directly responsible for that. But I will say, as far as the long-term health effects, we really don't have the data yet, so it's very hard to say. What we can do in the moment while we collect data is we can say, we can measure their exposure to nicotine and their exposure to other toxins in the products, and maybe compare them to conventional cigarettes and then to non-users on the other hand. Mm. And we can kind of estimate what the health effects might be, but we actually won't really know for decades, unfortunately, because the data are just coming out on use, and we have to track these people. Like, we don't have any data right now on what somebody looks like after a lifetime of e-cigarette use. We just don't have that data yet.
That makes me uncomfortable. You mentioned something I want to go back to, which is the risk factors, cigarette usage in the home, and you mentioned mental health. And let's talk a little bit about early addiction, nicotine addiction or other addiction, and how it intersects with anxiety and depression and things like that in kids especially.
Yes, so those with anxiety and depression are much more likely to use substances, which include tobacco. So there's a huge comorbidity here. There's a huge overlap between substance use and mental health issues. And it goes beyond just anxiety and depression. Something like 80% of people with schizophrenia are smokers, and this is thought to result from maybe self-medicating their symptoms. And so this could happen in a lot of other mental health issues as well.
So I know someone who smokes, and he said, this is my least dangerous addiction, so lay off. So when you talk to people about that addiction, and especially I'm thinking of parents when they're trying to figure out, we're not research scientists, we're parents, we're trying to do what's right for our kids. You could make the assumption here that this is a fairly harmless activity.
I would say so. I think we never want to encourage adolescents to go out and try e-cigarettes or any other substance. But I think we should be realistic about the fact that many of them are going to try it. And given that assumption, I think we should think about harm reduction. And I think e-cigarettes are fairly safe compared to many of the other products out there.
How does, and we only have like a minute left, so this is going to, you're probably going to get excited about this question, and I'm going to say we're out of time. Machine learning and artificial intelligence in your job, the information that's coming in and the new ways we have of analyzing it, how is that changing this kind of research for you?
It's changing it a lot. I do a lot of machine learning in my studies and big data analysis, and it's really helped us to move away from a one-size-fits-all approach to more targeted interventions and, kind of how do we, first of all, how do we identify the kids that are at risk? And then how do we treat them once we've identified the ones that are at risk? What kind of intervention can we do with them? And how is that particular to their circumstances based on their data and compared to the larger population?
You're pretty optimistic about how your job is going to change even in the next 5 years.
I'm excited about it. It's changing, but that's always a good thing for me, because changes mean that we need to understand what's going on.
Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.